You are now plugged into Action Feature.
Got a little crazy at one point, but
so we've had technical difficulties. So if this doesn't sound good to y'all folks, it's because something happened.
Something happened. Hopefully it'll sound good enough. I mean, it's not going crazy now.
With the recording program, something happened.
Something's happening with the programming on this show.
I don't believe this.
Hey, everybody, it's time for Action Features. Well,
your favorite podcast.
Maybe not after this episode.
You might disown us.
You might disown us. You might not like us anymore.
The unbelievable has happened, really.
Yeah. Mike and I have seen Batman vs. Superman.
The two guys who
did not want to see Batman vs.
Really
Superman.
Did not want to see it.
Batman vs. Superman.
You really didn't want to see it.
I really didn't want to see it. I had said multiple times, and people said, well, you're going to see it anyway. I said, I have no desire to go to the theater and see that movie, which I didn't.
Right.
But then my comic shop, Bob, he said, hey, they gave us, for the people here at the shop, they gave us some sneak preview passes for Tuesday before the movie comes out. And he said, so I'm calling to see if you want the tickets. And I was like, oh, free. Well, that's a bit of a game changer. He's like, that's why I'm calling you, is that I thought that this may be the deciding factor that you'll be seeing it for free. You won't actually have to pay to see the movie.
So you did the responsible thing.
So, yeah, I talked to you about it, and yeah. I said, you know, I'm contemplating going to see it since it's free. It's an early screening.
Which blew me out of my underwear.
Yeah, and I did it really for the show, mostly. Yeah. Like, I feel like we've talked about the film so much that it would kind of be a disservice to the people that followed the show for us to have never seen the movie and be able to either, you know, comment on what we'd said before, apologize for what we said before, or if we were, you know, pretty right on the money with what we'd talked about the film.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, I'm at a comic shop every Friday afternoon. Whenever a new comic film comes out, it's just a parade of people coming in and saying, did you see the movie? Did you see the movie? What'd you think about the movie? This is what I think about the movie. And it sometimes gets a little bit tough when I haven't seen a movie already to have all these people come in and talking about this movie and me be going, I haven't seen it. Can you not talk about it? Because I'm going to wait for the DVD. Or can I'd rather not, you know, I can't really give you my opinion on it because I haven't seen it.
Now you've seen it before everybody else saw it.
Now I've seen it. And so this episode, we're going to talk about the film. And that means that we are going to spoil things from the film.
Yes.
So if you have not seen the movie and you wish to remain spoiler-free, I would suggest you turn off this episode for now until after you've seen the film.
Yes.
Because we can't really talk about the movie without talking about the movie.
No, not at all. You know how we do.
So this is your warning right now. Is if you have not seen the movie, we are going to talk about things that will spoil surprises in the movie for you. So please, turn off the episode if you wish to remain spoiler-free. I know Eric Medor is remaining spoiler-free. I know that Dustin is trying to remain spoiler-free.
I think Nate was too.
I think Nate, there's a few guys that listen to the show on a regular basis that we really appreciate their continued listening, and we don't want to spoil things for anybody. So please, guys, we're not going to take offense. Just turn off the episode for now, and you can listen to it in another time. Okay?
Yeah.
Unless you don't care about spoilers, then go ahead and listen to it. Or if you've already seen the film, go ahead and listen to it.
All right. I have an opening statement before we get. We're going to try and go through the film as it occurred, so sort of chronological. That's the best way that we know how to do it.
But it has been a couple nights.
Yeah, that was a couple nights ago.
And it's a very long movie.
Yes.
So it's hard for us to know that we get every single thing in sequence.
Right.
So if we jump around a little bit, we apologize.
It's going
to
happen.
We really will try to stick with the way the movie was laid out.
Right. So, okay, so I guess what I want to clarify before we get into it, one, that I had thought that I would see this at some point. I thought that I would rent it when it came out on DVD. I wasn't so adamantly opposed to it as you were, I don't think.
Yeah.
And
that stemmed a lot from Man of Steel. Like, I
sure.
did not
and
enjoy
I, right, right.
Man of Steel
I know you
in
did
the
not.
Least.
And I did not see that movie.
Yeah.
I also am not... I'm not super... I'm not totally married to ideas or attached to ideas of characters. So, like, with Wonder Woman, like, I know about Wonder Woman, I know who she is, but...
Yeah.
You know, a slight changes in her character, I'm not probably not even going to pick up on or care about.
Yeah.
And also, I'm okay, to some degree, with the idea of playing with a character for a movie, you know, whatever's been established, whatever. So I want, like, for listeners and for this discussion, this is how I'm going into it. And honestly, I thought, maybe there's a chance that I'm going to enjoy this a little bit more than I thought. I mean, going to see it, I was kind of like, I haven't been to the theater in a long time. I haven't seen a superhero film in the theater in forever. This is a big event. It's a huge movie this summer. I mean, it's not summer yet, but this year, it's been talked about for a long time.
It's been going for 3 years.
And I was... I was very middle of the road. I was open to liking it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I had not, I'm only speaking for myself, but that's, so for everybody to know, that's how this was approached for me, was just, if this is good, then I'll be happy for it to be good.
Yeah. I'm kind of, you know, a lot of people, you know, they say to me, well, you're stuck in Batman 89, you're stuck with Christopher Reeve Superman, you'll never accept anybody else. And that's not really true. It's really the basis that I understand the fundamentals of Batman and the fundamentals of Superman. And if those things are there, then I'll give it a chance.
Yeah.
If you fundamentally change the character, and what I consider to be fundamental things that this character has to be and has to do...
The things you go there
to work. Yeah. Like, the Superman character that I know the Superman character to be, I want him to be a certain thing, a symbol of hope. And I want him to be a character that is not afraid to smile and that, you know, is not darkened and is kind of a setting example for other heroes to look at. He's the pinnacle. He's what you're... When you're a kid, you're like, oh, you know, Superman would do it this way, you know? And it's something to believe in. And whereas Batman is kind of he's the darker character, and he comes out of a place of vengeance and... I'm not going to go into what I think about each character, but you understand that if these fundamentals are there, then I would give it a chance, right. Regardless if it's a new director or if it's a new,
new suit or a new,
things that are different, I'll accept them as long as the fundamentals are there.
Yeah.
Then I'll look at the other things that are in a movie, plot, acting, cinematography, all those things will combine into what I think about a movie.
Right.
And in my estimation, I don't really think that for somebody to come and then say, well, you didn't like it because it's not this. That's not really fair. It had that original thing not been that good and not got the fundamentals of the character right, then I wouldn't have liked that thing either. It just so happens that the Chris Reeve Superman films got Superman right, in my opinion. And the 1989 Batman film and Batman Returns, regardless of the things that they changed that were lesser things about the character, in my opinion, they got the character right.
Right.
Batman the Mask of the Phantasm got the character right. So, and then along with it, it was a really good, solid film.
Right. You're not gonna go to Burger King and ask for want a pizza.
I'm not.
You
go
to Burger King for the.
I'm gonna go there for the Whopper.
Yeah.
So that's my take on it.
Right.
So had they done with this film, had their interpretations of these characters matched what I feel like are the fundamentals of these characters, and there were slight changes here and there, but the rest of the film was really good and it was solid, I would have left and gone, that was a really good, solid film.
Yeah.
You know?
They could swing you on some smaller changes.
I wouldn't put it in my head, how does this compare to Batman 89, and how does this compare to Christopher Reeve's Superman? I'm comparing it to the characters of Batman and Superman, and its merits as a film on its own.
Right. That's how I feel like, I've already got my Batman movies, and I've already got my Superman movies, and anything else is a bonus, so really, you know, whatever. But, okay, so that's where we're coming from on this, and... Like I said, I'm a little less character-driven, but as a film, that's how I'm looking at this. How does this work as a film? I don't know if you want to just go into it.
I think we should start off by saying that...
Start all the good stuff.
Well, I'm going to start off by saying, because, you know, I felt like... And I'm not dogging on Brad. Brad is a good friend, and, you know, I felt like when he talked to us about the Terminator Genisys and how we kind of...
Oh, yeah.
He felt like we'd kind of bash the film throughout... I do want to preface it by saying that I did not enjoy this film.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to express my opinions of this film, and most of them are going to be negative.
Yeah.
And if that is something you don't care to hear, like an overly negative view of the film, then you may not want to listen to what I have to say from here on.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not going to be an overly positive review because I didn't have an overly positive view of the film.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like you have the same.
That is very true, and I don't think we're in the minority.
I don't think so either.
I mean, I think there are a lot of people that are going to enjoy this film regardless, but we'll get into why and the reasons and all that stuff.
Well, there are sadly many people that are just posting and saying things online like, well, I'm going to like it regardless. It's right. Batman versus Superman, right. So I'm just going to like it regardless. And nobody should, I can't believe all these critics are saying it's bad.
Right.
They just don't like it because it's not Marvel and it's not Disney. It's not this and it's not that. That's not fair. People are allowed to not like things and not have some kind of ulterior motive in not liking them. They're allowed to just not like them.
Right.
Just like you're allowed to just like it. They're allowed to not like it.
Right.
But you may want to actually see the film before you automatically decide that you're going to like it regardless.
Right.
That's not a good way to look at things. Like, to go into anything and just go, well, I don't care how bad most of it is. As long as I see Batman and Superman fight, it's good. That's not a good way to be. That means that they can just give you anything.
Right.
They can just slop anything in front of you and you'll just take it.
That's, yeah, that's how I feel like, to just defend something just because it's a comic book movie is not responsible, and what it ultimately means is nobody really gets any good comic book movies.
Exactly.
And what's been
we get Iron Man 3s.
Right, and what's been happening over the past decade maybe or so has been comic book movies that are actually really good, and a lot of outsiders get in, and they start being interested in comic book movies and comic book heroes, and I'd like to see that happening, and for Hollywood and film in general as an art form, I'd like to see, you know, a company who spends $250 million on a movie to produce something that is actually worth,
yeah,
you know, instead of not. So anyway, let's
just jump into the movie.
Let's get
we've said all we need to say beforehand.
We'll get into the movie.
The movie opens up with the retelling of Batman's origin, which is I think the right way to handle it. If you're not doing a Batman standalone film before this, it's a good way to just jump right in, tell the Batman origin really quick. It's something we all know, but it's something you kind of have to get over with when you're introducing a new Batman in film. And personally, I thought it was filmed well.
Yeah,
I thought that it was a little bit Snyder-y. It reminded me of the beginning of Watchmen where they do kind of the slow-mo thing. Yeah. And
I liked Watchmen.
I liked Watchmen up until the end. Yeah. I didn't like the change in the ending. But I did like Watchmen. Yeah. And I did like 300.
Yeah.
So it's not like I just hate all Snyder films.
I like 300 a lot, too.
It definitely felt like Snyder's. You could tell Snyder was the one doing it. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, though.
I liked the...
It was well done.
I liked... I'm tired of seeing the Batman origin story, as I said to you. So, that aside, I kind of like the pearls getting caught around the slide of the gun.
That's
I thought that
from
was
the comics.
Oh,
that's
is it?
From the Frank Miller books. Yeah, I remember right. Yeah, it getting caught on the gun and him, you know, it breaking from the gun.
I thought that was...
I'm almost positive that is from Miller.
Okay.
I like that they brought in the pearls, just like Batman 89 made sure to show you the pearls getting broken, which was kind of an imagery from the pearls hitting. It was Frank Miller imagery. I thought that it was great that they did it. There was Marcus Zorro. The only thing I didn't like was his reaction. The kind of the Bruce Wayne kind of screaming, I think he was doing, or maybe... I want to say he was screaming.
Yeah.
Instead of... I'm not trying to just say Batman 89 did everything better. I liked the just kind of in shock look that Bruce Wayne as a kid had, instead of the screaming out that I felt like... I could be misremembering, but I'm pretty sure he was like screaming or something when...
I don't even remember.
But that aside, I thought it's probably the best interpretation of that I've seen on film since the 89 version.
And it did convey a lot in a short amount of time without a whole lot said.
You
got the story, you got the whole story of
it. You had Ben Affleck's Bruce Wayne do it, talking over it, kind of.
And it sets up for further dream sequences because it's a dream sequence that opens up.
I could have done without, because then afterwards they're doing the funeral scene, and it has him falling into the cave and all the bats coming out. I could have kind of done without that, because
I didn't do that either.
It's been done a few times now. That part you really don't need as much as you need to see his parents get murdered in front of him.
If they had cut it short, I would have enjoyed it a little bit more.
And I didn't need him. So, it also had a sequence of the bats kind of making him float up.
Yeah, he was. The bats were like lifting him out of this.
It was interpreted that it was a dream.
Yeah,
that he was dreaming about it, and that was part of the dream.
Right.
Again, though, that's a minor nitpick. I thought that the beginning opening sequence was pretty solid.
I did too.
I was with it.
And I can't remember exactly the sequence of events, but I think the first, after that, it's Bruce Wayne, right? It goes right into Bruce Wayne.
It goes right into Bruce during the destruction of Metropolis.
Right.
During the big Superman fight. Right. And that was great.
And that was great, and right away, without, like, right after that happened, you lean over and you said, Ben Affleck is not going to be the problem with this movie. I mean, because you could tell. I mean, he fits.
He really did well.
Just going to say, from the get-go, that was he was the saving grace of the film, in my opinion, and I've seen other reviews to the contrary, or said he was the weakest point because...
Most of the reviews I've seen have been negative on everything else, but positive on Ben Affleck.
Right. I thought he physically, you know, embodied Bruce. He had his hair was right. I know they have stylists and stuff, but there's like... Yeah. I could see him being rendered in a comic book, being accurate. His voice was fine. His demeanor, everything was good with him.
I think there were certain aspects that they didn't write well on Batman, but as far as his portrayal of Batman, it was solid.
Yeah.
Like, when he was running through Metropolis and trying to save people, like, in the car, like, doing his thing, you know, you could see he was being Batman at that point. Right. He had on the Bruce Wayne mask, but he was being Batman. And I thought that was great. Watching it, I'm like,
maybe it's something.
This may be solid. Like, I was watching it, and I was with it. And then after that, it becomes a thing where every time that he's not on the screen, you want him on the screen.
That's how I feel.
Because the other things that you see on the screen just aren't nearly as good.
Right. So right off the bat, I mean, no pun intended. Right off the bat, you have that opening sequence, and like you said, you were with it, I was with it, and then there are several cuts to other scenarios or scenes happening very quickly. One is Lois Lane in the desert, the other is... There's something else that happens at the beginning. I can't even remember, but there was like three.
I think the other one is them getting kryptonite out of the ocean.
Okay, so they're trying to establish a lot, and I understand that, but after Bruce Wayne, nothing else is really set up. I feel like I didn't feel like you got a good grasp of any scenario or plot point that was going on. It was just it's one thing after another, and here we're going to fit this in and fit it in, and you need to linger a little bit at the beginning of a movie to establish your characters and motivations and things like that, and I don't feel like that was well done. Whatever. So Lois Lane gets...
She's in trouble, and...
she gets in trouble.
You know, I don't know where she's at, Africa? I don't know where she is. But she's meeting with some kind of terrorist, and it becomes a thing where the CIA went with her, and... then these bad guys kind of turn on other bad guys, and she's been held kidnapped, and then Superman, of course, comes to save the day, and he basically flies a guy through a wall, like at like full speed. So I don't know if it's implied that he's still killing, or if that guy survived, or what. It's just kind of like left.
Later in the movie, they reference what happened when Superman went there. He crossed a line and some people died or something, but I never got...
Well, that's because... Okay, so it's kind of muddled, but the way it seems is that the guys there that turn on the other guys were plants by Luthor.
Right, okay.
To make it seem like Superman had killed all these people.
Right.
But that plot line kind of never goes anywhere.
Yes,
there's a lot of plot lines that aren't fully explained, and you just kind of go... Okay, I think I understand, but not to the point where it's like, you know, really kind of told to you to follow this along, and then it kind of just doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
So you kind of you're jumped into it and you don't really know what's going on, and then just when you think you figure out what's going on, you find out that part didn't even matter. So she gets like a magic bullet during that sequence.
Yeah, she gets a bullet.
It's like a special technology bullet.
Not the blender.
So let's leave that be for now.
Not the smoothie blender.
Superman's been framed into thinking that he's done some other thing where he's crossed the line with his powers.
Which, once again, I totally missed, in part because it just shows him going back to the apartment.
Yeah,
and there's no consequence whatsoever.
Other than she's naked in the tub, which it's kind of a blatantly... Why is she just naked during this scene?
Well, she's bathing, but...
But It didn't have to be like that. Right. You know, like, it's just a scene where it's like, why are you doing it like this?
They want it to be romantic so he can get into the tub with his clothes on.
But yeah, they've implied that they're now, like, living together, yeah. and they have this, like, solid relationship. They're in love. And so they've kind of level-jumped the Superman character, you know, from how long it took him. And again, just like Man of Steel, where it took away the Lois Clark dynamic by her knowing he was Clark right off the bat, you've jumped them into a relationship. It's been 18 months or whatever since Man of Steel. And you've jumped them into a relationship that's been established for a while, so we've lost all that, too. Like, this... I feel like the Superman character has just been kind of taken away by Snyder. Like, he's making you miss out on all the things that you would like to see if you're a Superman fan. You would like to see the Lois and Clark dynamic. You would like to see them build their relationship, get it to go somewhere. But you're just skipping over all that and just saying, well, it's already like that.
For the sake of film also... And this goes through the rest of the film... I never feel anything for... I don't care about Lois.
I don't either.
I don't care about their relationship.
Yeah.
And it's partly because of that. There's been no establishing, you know, dynamic, or you don't see them fall in love, or you don't see... It's just like, okay, they're here, and here it is.
There's never a... There's never, like, volleys, or I don't know how to... in Superman's...
Right, there's
or
no...
his acting, or no his character.
There's no ups and downs.
It's just
there's
always
no,
just even.
Right.
He's always just like this all the time.
He's really even-keeled the
whole
time.
There's no happy, and there's no sad, and there's no nothing. It's just always this.
Well,
and that's not Superman.
No dynamics.
There's not. It's just there.
Within himself.
Yeah, it just lingers.
So there's a... What, you have something...
Well, and playing into that, the whole, you know, Superman gets the frame job or whatever. You don't know it's a frame job at that point. You find out when they have this UN meeting, and people are talking about how Superman killed all these people. But they make a big deal driving it home repeatedly throughout the film that Superman has lost his halo in the public eye. And I kept thinking to myself, like, when exactly did Superman have a halo in the Man of Steel universe? Our first exposure to him is the big fight in Metropolis that levels the city, and they're playing off of majorly in this film, talking about all this destruction that was caused and how his power is unchecked to the point where Bruce Wayne feels like he's got to take him out and all these things. I don't remember a time where Superman was the beloved Superman.
Yeah.
They've made a statue to him for some reason, and they're talking about how he's lost his halo and all these different things. Like, he's, oh, now, you know, people are worried and scared of him. At what point weren't they worried and scared of him? You have to have... You can't do that. You can't take a character and just say that he's lost all this his luster and all the... But you never gave him luster.
Right.
So we don't care. We don't care that he's down in the dumps and all these things have happened to him, because we've never seen him not down in the dumps.
Right.
You can't... That's not a character evolution. You're not giving us anything.
Right.
You're not giving us the other end of the spectrum.
You've got to be something to latch on to get us through these fantastic events. So there's a lot to get to. So basically the movie keeps going on in these disjointed, fragmented, poorly cut scenes. I mean, nothing seems to flow
at all
from one to the next or make any sense. It's just, here's an idea that we had, we put it in, and now let's get on to the other idea that we had. And it's just it just lugs on like this,
it jumps a lot.
It's very hard to wrap your mind around. And I'm not a professional film critic or anything like that, but I have watched films that are, you know, very intricate and hard to follow, and there's a certain art to the craft.
Yeah.
And I would say, even for Zack Snyder, I mean, like you said, Watchmen was like that. You know, you could follow Watchmen, even though there was a lot of back and forth between time periods.
Well, he had a good roadmap for Watchmen.
And probably 302.
He wasn't trying to... It felt like he picked little pieces out from different things he'd heard about superheroes, or that he'd glossed over. And reading the things that he's saying now, he doesn't seem like he actually has much knowledge of the Batman or Superman characters. Just little snippets, enough to that he can say, well, I'm a comic book guy.
Yeah.
But you're really not, because you wouldn't say, I'm going to take this little chunk out of Dark Knight Returns and slap it into my movie. It has no context, but I'm just going to slap it in. If you're a comic book guy, you wouldn't do that, because you would understand what the importance of that scene in those books is and what brought it about.
Right.
Like you're saying, that's jumping around. There's scenes of Batman being Batman, and he saves these kids, and he brands the guy, and there's news reports saying that he's now branding people, and they go to prison, and they get murdered.
Right.
And he obviously does not care about that happening.
Right.
There's a whole sequence where he's chasing down the white Portuguese, he's calling, and he lies to Alfred and says it's a dirty bomb, But you find out later that it's actually kryptonite that's on a boat, that he somehow figured out is Luthor's, but I don't believe that at that point that he started the search that we've established that the kryptonite is coming in on a boat. So it's like, was that sequence put in out of order? Or that's how disjointed it is from scene to scene.
It's going to get confusing for me from now on because I can't even remember what the next step was. I can't remember what the next step was at all from where we were. And
it's very disjointed. I know that the major plot points that... Okay, so Lois is doing her bullet search.
Right.
Bruce is, you know, trying to find the kryptonite because he feels like that Superman is out of control. Like, he thinks he's too powerful.
Right.
If there's any chance he could go bad, we've got to take him out.
Right.
He never bothers to use his detective skills to investigate Superman.
Right.
And maybe, meanwhile, while Lois is searching out the secret bullet to find out that there's a frame job, Batman doesn't bother to do any of that stuff. He just takes it at face value that this guy's too powerful and I should probably kill him.
Right.
Then we've got Luthor, who is... we'll comment on the Jesse Eisenberg thing in a minute.
We'll get to him.
But Luthor's plot line is that for some reason he just hates Superman. It's never explained why, but he just wants to kill him.
There's lots of ramblings about gods and the notion of gods and God, and you get the feeling that maybe he's jealous of.
But it's never really explained
power,
why.
Yeah, there's his dad hit him. He's mentioned his dad beat him at one point, but it's sour grapes. It's like, okay, big deal. His character is very unclear, and we will get to him.
He's got major leaps of logic. Like, yeah. He somehow has kryptonite, has already got Zod's body and figured out that kryptonite can hurt Kryptonians, which he then makes a deal, because he tells the senator lady, that's played by Holly Hunter, that he'll have the thing that can take out the to Superman, like a failsafe, in case he does go awry. But he needs clearance to get this kryptonite rock back into America. So then he makes a deal with another guy that wasn't her to get the stuff in. And to make the deal to get the kryptonite in, he gets access to Zod's body, but we've already seen that he has access to Zod's body and access to the Kryptonian ship. So somehow he knows that the Kryptonian ship's going to be able to do something, and he needs Zod's body to do it. So it's huge leaps of logic. Like, how would you know that the Kryptonian ship can do anything with Zod's body? You already had Zod's body, so are you making a deal for Zod's body? You're going to have giant chunks of kryptonite, so do you really need to make something to destroy Superman? You've already got the thing that could destroy Superman. So it's just one thing after another, and his portrayal is horrendous.
Yeah.
It's not edgy. It's not cool. It's not... Oh, it's really different. It's just annoying.
I'll tell you what.
It's just really annoying.
It seemed like to me, really... The chronological thing is gone. It felt to me like Zack Snyder or whoever said, "Remember the Joker?
Remember everybody? Ledger's Joker?
Remember how everybody liked the Joker? We need that."
And
we
if you can maybe mix that with a little Jim Carrey Riddler at the same time.
And it felt like Jesse Eisenberg, who I do not like.
I don't either.
But somebody told him to do this stuff. So maybe it's not all his fault, I don't know, but it seemed like he's trying really hard and coming up looking like he's trying really hard. You know,
it came across as acting.
Right, a good actor
the entire time
should portray a character and you don't know that person is acting.
Exactly.
And it felt like he's just, wow, he's really desperately trying here to come up with some notion. And what I see
some unique take on the character that's not really unique.
All these villains are now just an amalgamation of each other. Mm-hmm. Everything, it's just run together, it's the same old thing, and he does a bunch of weird stuff, which...
It's just constant.
We'll get to
it. It wouldn't be so bad if it ever, like, turned off. Again, like, the same with Superman, where it's kind of the same thing throughout. There's no high notes and low notes, it's just the same thing.
No arc.
His is always a high, weird note. There's never a change for you to kind of get a break from it.
Right.
You know he's going to be weird and odd and strange and... You alright?
I just bit my tongue.
Oh. It's going to be awkward, and you're not going to enjoy watching it. And every time he comes on the screen, you know it's going to happen again. And it's just, it's very unpleasant to watch.
And on top of that, once again, never getting a clear understanding of his motivation or why. So once again, you don't care, really, about him or anything that's happening with him. There was, good Lord, I don't even know where to go.
Well, he has a whole plot line where it's... You know, he's trying to do these things to get to this Kryptonian technology, but he also, at the same time, is doing this weird thing. You know, he's responsible for all these frame-ups on Superman. He gets a Wayne employee that was paralyzed and puts him in a wheelchair and sends him to this UN conference. He's pulled the strings for that to happen, so Superman will be there too. And then he uses that to blow it all up. And that's his revenge on the Holly Hunter senator character,
right,
because she wouldn't do the thing he wanted her to do because she went back on the deal. But right, yet somehow the deal still goes through.
She wouldn't give him clearance. He wanted clearance to import the kryptonite, which he was already doing.
He's already doing it. Even, he gets it done.
Even by the time he blows her up.
Because Batman's already investigating
right,
it.
All that stuff has already happened.
Yeah.
So
It's really hard to even like nail all these plot lines down because they're such a mess and they're so just like thrown together, and there's big leaps of faith throughout the whole thing where I still go back and go, how did that even happen? Bruce Wayne ends up figuring out that Lex is involved by cloning a guy's cell phone, and he made calls to LexCorp, and so they have to somehow get LexCorp files. So he goes to a party that Lex has invited him to, but he's also invited Clark Kent to, and they end up there together, and Bruce is getting information in his ear from Alfred, so Clark hears that. He goes downstairs, gets into a computer area, and uses a flash drive to hack these files.
So, yeah, he's got this device.
He gets caught in there.
He gets caught by Lex's assistant.
But she lets him go.
And he's in like this giant computer room, like this.
It's obviously not a bathroom.
This mainframe, it's this place where obviously secrets are. And by the way, there's just a little wire hanging down out of the
conveniently
thing. And you can just plug in
it.
Whatever his device was, it's not, I mean, it wasn't like just a thumb drive, it was a Bruce Wayne.
Well, it copies
Wayne,
all right, the files.
It's a Bruce Wayne device. So it's a good thing he found the wire
that
will allow him access to just hijack all these files throughout the whole computer system. But he says, I was just looking for the bathroom. And she's just like, okay. And she just leaves him down there. And she's got this presence throughout, like she's gonna
do something.
She's gonna do something or figure something out. And she never does.
She doesn't. And then she dies. And that's it.
And she blows up in the...
She gets blown up in the big thing. Like, Lex just goes, I'll save my seat or something, and she just gets blown up.
Right.
So she had to be in on the whole plot of doing this wheelchair and all that stuff. Right. So she probably knows she was gonna get blown up. What's the point?
So anyway, Bruce does this thing. It doesn't make any sense. He goes upstairs. He has a little talk with Clark Kent, and for some reason, Lex thinks...
That exchange wasn't bad. I like the exchange between Clark and Bruce.
I like the exchange between Clark and Bruce. When Lex comes up, for some reason, that's when it becomes contrived,
it's
and
a train
it seems
wreck,
like
then.
Just trying to shoehorn these sayings in, like... Oh, that's a strong grip. I would not pick a fight with this man.
Yeah.
You made that for the trailer to get people to chuckle, but why would anybody actually say that? Why would you actually say that? And why are you so happy and surprised? Like, oh, Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent. Bruce Wayne is a name.
Yeah.
Clark Kent is not a name. Clark Kent is a lowly reporter from the Daily Planet.
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot more. And... Later on in the film, it's revealed that he somehow knows Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Right, okay, so the only reason it could be in there makes sense is that he set this up so that those two would meet.
Which is completely pointless.
Right.
Like, if you know that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and you know Clark Kent is Superman, why wouldn't you just drop the kryptonite on him when he's just being Clark Kent somewhere?
Why invite him to your party?
Why invite him to your party?
Which, by the way, I want to point out before we get too far that Gotham City and Metropolis are a stone's throw away just across this little body of water.
That was one of my bigger things that I was just like, that is the dumbest thing in this movie. They're right next door to each other. Yet they go out of their way to talk about how... Clark keeps wanting to report on the bat. Oh, what about this bat in Gotham? Should I report on this bat in Gotham? Oh, we're not going to talk about that bat over in Gotham. Like, it's some faraway place, but it's right next door.
Right.
And Batman's been Batman for 20 years. I'm spitting food, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
He's been Batman for 20 years. Did I get you?
It's on me.
I'm sorry.
Ah, gross.
I'm sorry, man. Okay. I didn't mean to get you.
It's all right, I'll live.
He's been Batman for 20 years. So why are they just now going, oh, that's something to report on that.
Oh, that's right at
the bat in Gotham? No, we don't need to report on that. What? Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Like, that was pointless. Other than to just get the fight going between their two cities,
right,
put them right next to each other, but that's dumb.
So
at the party, Diana Prince shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And Batman's like, ooh, she's cute, basically. And so he goes back to retrieve his device, but she's already got it. We're given no explanation as to how she knew he had a device, how he was that she knew he was copying files, none of that stuff.
So, yeah, so what happens is she eludes him at the party, he goes back down, he finds the device is gone, and he turns around, she's standing there at the entrance to the thing to make sure that he sees her with
it. Because she had to get out of the way for him to come in there.
Right. So
she came back to it.
So she's waiting
to
for
show,
him,
hey, I'm here.
For him to see. Then she leaves and makes sure that she gets out before he can catch her.
Yeah.
So, for what?
Why did he show him that?
And here's where that leads. She gets in contact with him and says, "Oh well, I just wanted a picture. Lex had a picture that was that belonged to me, and but it was encrypted anyway. So here's
it back.
Here's it back. You can have it back." It's like totally like
it's a why? Why did this whole thing happen? There's no explanation as to how she knew about it, and there's no explanation as to why she went after it, because all you're getting is a copy of it.
Yeah.
You're not even getting it.
Right.
Like
you're not even getting it. Yeah, you're not even getting it.
You're not
retrieve it for yourself.
Yeah, you're not getting a physical copy of it, right. Like the only one that's there. You're getting a copy of the files.
Right.
So what's the point?
So what's it for?
It's still not going to get it back from him.
And if Bruce Wayne's the one who...
How did she know he had it?
If Bruce is the one who went in there and has the technology to retrieve this information, why not say, "Hi, Bruce," why not use your feminine wiles and say, "Hey, Bruce, I know you're a playboy. How about this? What if I go to your house tonight?
What if we hang out tonight?
What if you just put this on your computer and decrypt it for me?
Decrypt it for me."
I mean.
So he does decrypt it for her.
I will say that the interaction between them two at the party,
it was well done.
I liked their interaction. It's just all these plot points don't make sense.
Everything around, it's really the plot that's the big, big problem. Because it's just like they didn't care. It was just throw as much stuff as you can in here.
Right.
The cameos they throw in are completely pointless. Like, it's just more thrown on top of this film that already can't take what it's already got.
Oh, yeah. we'll get to this.
You get... Okay, so you've got all these plot points established that Wonder Woman's kind of in it for herself to find this picture.
Yeah.
You've got Lois kind of trying to figure out the conspiracy figure about the thing about Superman. Superman's just kind of there.
I did feel like Superman was
just kind of there.
Just along for the ride. He was a secondary.
He's just waiting for things to happen around him.
Right.
So you got this whole plot point about the halo and him in the public eye and all these things that kind of just never goes anywhere.
Right.
You got the whole, you know, we're going to uncover this conspiracy theory about this, you know, the who it really was, which was Lex's guys from the magic bullet that was made at LexCorp. So that's kind of stupid that they use LexCorp bullets there.
Well, that's what I never got, was why did he make bullets out of a special metal that could be traced back to him? You can get bullets for guns.
It's just guns. But they had to use special LexCorp bullets so that she'd be able to do this.
Right.
So her little tiny bit of detective work could have been easily done by Batman to figure out that, wait a second, somebody's framing Superman and making him look bad. Maybe I should just try and talk to Superman.
Right.
Instead of just immediately deciding that I should kill him. And speaking of killing, this Batman kills.
Yeah.
I just want to establish that. Don't let Zack Snyder sit there and tell you that, oh, it's just killing by proxy. You know, it's just so happens that these things happen around him. That's his defense now, that's killing by proxy, and it's not.
Yeah, he actively...
It's blatantly killing people. I mean, he drops cars on people, he shoots people. It's not... There is no doubt about it. He does not care about sparing lives.
Right.
And this is kind of moving into other movies, if he doesn't care about sparing lives, then he should have no rogues gallery. There should not be a Joker still.
Right.
There should not be a Man-Bat or a Killer Croc or any of those guys. Anybody that he deemed killable in this movie was just like hired guns. Just guys transporting freight that he just was willing to just kill them. Guys that you could probably get to turn their lives around. They might be able to have a second chance. Guys like the Joker doesn't get a second chance. So if he's still alive at this point, then something doesn't add up.
Right.
So that's established. So Batman's whole thing is he's going to get this kryptonite. He has this weird dream sequence that's just thrown into the film and, again, has no bearing on anything.
Right.
He is in the dream. It's this post-apocalyptic world that's been controlled by Darkseid. Parademons show up and... it's alluded that Superman's gone bad because there's these guys with the Superman things. He kills a bunch of guys in that, but then the parademons knock him out. He wakes up, so he's waking up inside of a dream sequence. Superman comes to him and says, you know, she's the only thing I cared about, and you took her from me, and then kills him. He wakes up from that. He's at the Batcave computer. He turns, and this lightning bolt opens up, and what you have to basically be told is Flash... Because there's no really way of telling that it's Flash.
I still couldn't tell. It looked like he was in an Iron Man suit to
me. He was basically in an Iron Man suit.
And at that point, you hadn't seen
You hadn't seen the video. Seen the Flash. So you hadn't known that there was a Flash. And he says something to the effect of, Lois is the key. Lois is the key. Something to that effect.
Right. So why is the Flash coming to Bruce in a dream sequence?
I don't know. It kind of felt like it alluded to the Injustice game. In the Injustice game, Joker kills Lois and Superman snaps. And then he kind of becomes this... utilitarian dictator type of guy, which is kind of what that sequence felt like. We're playing Superman, but they'd also done Darkseid in that sequence, so neither one added up. It was like, okay, is this Darkseid controlled world, or is this a Superman controlled world where he's lost Lois and now Flash is warning him to not let that happen? But either way, it goes nowhere.
Yeah, it's a dead end, and it's just
Batman doesn't even contact Lois. He doesn't do anything to help Lois. He's been given this vision, but does nothing with it.
Whatever momentum the movie was building, which is not much, stops dead. At that point, I was just
sitting there like, what is this? What just happened? Like, and I felt like the audience was doing the same thing, like,
okay,
what was that? Like, what just happened?
I will say, just want to interject and be fair, that the dream sequence where Batman is fighting in this world, in this desert, I very much enjoyed that, and I would really just want that movie.
Yeah, it looked cool.
Just give me that movie.
Him in the desert gear looked really neat.
Yeah, it was cool.
But, okay, so he gets this dream sequence. He then is definitely going to get this kryptonite. And, there's a whole thing with a plot line where Superman goes to the UN, and that thing blows up. And then one of his employees comes in. He says something like, isn't he getting our checks? And one of these employees comes in like, oh, he keeps sending it back. And there's this big stack of checks, and everyone has in red writing stuff like, you let him kill me or kill my family. You didn't save your family. All these different things scrawled on the checks that are sent back. And Bruce is like, didn't anybody want to tell me about this?
Right.
It's like, okay, well, yeah, he would have been told about that.
Yeah, why would that
not be told about?
Right. That was later
We find out later on, though, that it's Luthor that did that because he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And that just slipped in really quickly.
Yeah.
Like, Luthor just says, I wanted to get him riled up, so I sent all these letters to the red checks. And then he moves on to the next thing, and I had to actually, like, do a double take. Like, did he just reveal that he knows Bruce Wayne is Batman?
Yeah.
Because it's never even, like... addressed.
It's not addressed or said, and Lex never says anything, to my recollection, of, oh, Bruce, you've got a secret.
He never does anything with it.
Yeah, he never...
It's just there. Like, you're just... It's this nugget thrown in real quick, and people have... After I've said this about Lane, they're like, well, he probably knew for a long time. And you just accept that. Like, that's a major point.
Yeah.
If Luthor's going to continue on in the DC Cinematic Universe... Yeah. Him knowing that Clark Kent is Superman and Bruce Wayne is Batman is huge. And it can't just be swept under the rug. You've got to tell. You can't just throw that in there as a quick nugget like, I sent you all these things. That's it.
If your main villain knows all the secret identities...
What's the point?
Why is it... It's not fun anymore.
And if Batman's willing to kill, just kill the dude.
Yeah. Just kill him. Yeah, okay. I don't know... So
the car chase scene to get the kryptonite.
Yes. Okay, so Batman... shows up. He's on the top of he's on the pinnacle of a roof or something. He's got a rifle, which is very... It was stolen right out of Dark Knight
Returns.
Totally
Dark Knight Returns.
And I liked seeing it.
I did too.
I thought, wow, that looks cool. I knew what it was from, and I know that the movie is not that, but I thought, okay, cool.
Every time one of those moments happened, though, as cool as it looked to me, it made me sad.
Wish, like,
because it was like, I really wish that this didn't happen, because we might have had a Dark Knight Returns
movie.
Right,
I'd rather just see
Dark Knight Returns.
So Batman shoots the trailer. They get this in this giant crate trailer. Batman shoots the trailer with a tracking device. Immediately after that, as soon as the trailer and all of the caravan that's guarding it starts to drive off, Batman's there in his Batmobile, which, by the way... I would like to see a Batmobile that looks like something instead of just...
This one's at least better than the Tumbler, but it's still not great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... But once again, and I don't know if this is Zack Snyder's problem or just modern movie making or rush for time or whatever, but you never really get... You need an establishing shot sometimes to care about something. Like, if there's going to be a car chase, no matter what the car, if it's whatever, a Chevelle. I mean, in Jack Reacher... you see the Chevelle, and you see it being beautifully, and it's beautifully shot the whole time. So by the time the car chase happens, you're with that car because the person who's driving the car is on the inside. But when you're watching the chase, the car is the character.
Yeah.
And so once again, so Batman takes off after these guys. He immediately picks up this giant crate with this harpoon that he shoots.
No, that's a car.
Was he driving a car?
He knocks a car down with people in it. and then drags it behind him.
Right.
And then he uses the car
right.
as like a slingshot device.
He whips it
to
into
crush
another,
guys right. inside of another car.
Okay.
Thereby killing all the guys in that car.
So he takes off on this in this mad chase, and there's this big battle for it in this chase, and it ends with him crashing, and Superman comes down, and they exchange a few words, and then Superman leaves, and next scene, Batman's back at the Batcave, and he's looking where the thing is being tracked to. Why were you chasing them?
Why didn't you just go to a place where it was?
If you thought you had a chance of catching them, why didn't you just try and catch them and, you know, be, like, because you can write however...
Be discreet.
You can write however it's going to happen.
Batman is sneaky. Well, here's the other thing that's a double whammy on that.
It makes sense to me. It's just to get the Batmobile in there.
Yep.
Like, because he was going to go back and track it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, and by the way, acting as if he's got no time to lose. So what? It was pointless. It was for nothing.
Totally. And the other thing about it is we know now that Lex knows Bruce Wayne's Batman. And he wants Batman to get the kryptonite, it seems like. So why do you make it so hard to get the kryptonite?
Yeah, why'd he make it hard for Batman?
Why'd he make it so hard? He could have put a couple guards on that and had it moving, and Batman could have got it easily.
Right.
But it's just kind of like, he only knows Bruce Wayne's Batman when it's convenient to the story.
Right.
That's the only times he knows it, is when it's convenient to the story. So he eventually goes and then steals it from the place.
He steals
that
it
they
from
took it to.
Lex Luthor, LexCorp,
some warehouse or LexCorp warehouse.
Which, by the way,
something.
He puts it under glass immediately in some display case
yeah.
for some reason.
Like, here it
this
is.
This is your top secret maniacal project.
Yeah.
Why is this out?
Oh, Luthor has also figured out, without investigating, that he should cut off Zod's fingertips and stick them to his own fingertips, and then go to that Kryptonian ship, because of course it's going to use fingerprint technology, because it's alien, so it probably would use fingerprint technology. Gets inside there. You want
to... Well, I just want to say that you figured that out, because it really wasn't shown. I don't remember...
It's not, really.
Right, so when I saw him cutting off the fingertips with the kryptonite knife, I thought, well, he's just testing out what
DNA.
Kryptonite does. And he just... And actually, I didn't know that it was Lex Luthor, if I remember correctly. There's all these guys surrounding, all these forensics guys, and all these... So it could have been anybody doing that. I don't recall. And maybe they did show him.
I don't remember for sure either.
But they didn't show... There was no sequence where he was like...
Putting him on his fingers.
Yeah, these on his fingertips.
You can barely see it when he goes into there that he's got things on his fingertips. And there's Zod's fingertips. Right. So he gets inside the ship.
Oh,
and
my God. This
you love
favorite.
This sequence. This is your favorite, right?
This is
you
my
go ahead.
This is my favorite of the
you
film.
You go ahead.
Okay. So... Oh, my God. Okay, so we're not in chronological order anymore. This is towards the end.
It's middle.
Lex,
because the Batman Superman fight hasn't happened yet.
Right. Okay. So this is happening like while the Batman Superman fight is happening.
No. This is before.
Right. But that fight happens while all this stuff is going on in the ship. Right. Because there's...
No. He gets into the ship and the ship accepts him.
Okay. Okay. So
and then he starts getting the archive thing.
Right. I'm misremembering. So immediately he accidentally, within two false moves, activates the entire ship, which is being flooded. By the way, it has
a bunch of liquid in it.
It's raining in Gotham, so obviously if it's raining, then everything is going to be flooded.
Flood.
So it's flooded in the ship. He activates the ship, and the ship says immediately, "Would you like to assume control of the ship?" And he says, "Yes, I would."
Yes, I would.
Yes, I would. And so the ship immediately then says something
archives,
along something along lines of
archives are now open to you or
welcome
something
to
like that.
Yeah, we have 10,000 years of history. Why would that be the first thing the ship?
I don't know.
Why so easy? By the way, the first time he visits the ship, it's covered by guards and government personnel and scientists and people that are working there. Lex has had to finagle his way and buy his access to this.
Yeah.
But even so,
there's still a ton of people there, and if it gets opened, they're going to notice it.
Right, when he shows up the second time, at this point, there's nobody there. He just goes in willy-nilly.
And he takes Zod's body in there,
So somehow he gets Zod's body in there, which he had. He drags it down into the water. He takes a knife. He cuts his hand, and then drips the blood onto Zod's face for no...
No reason
whatsoever.
He just knows that that's going to do something.
And somehow he thinks that that's going to rejuvenate Zod. Zod starts to sink into the water, and so all the blood that he's dripped on his face just dissipates into the water like it would wash off. The ship computer says something like, foreign organic material will have no effect in this way, or whatever says.
It says something like bioengineering is against the law of the council or something
like
that.
Basically says something. So he just lets the body drift off into the water, and then it cuts to something else. So that's the last we see of it for a little bit.
So he had no knowledge that this blood of his would do anything to a Kryptonian body, right. Like that it would create this thing, or that there would be some kind of bioengineering thing in there to do something. It's just all just assumed. You're just like supposed to go, it's just that's the way it is.
Right, and as far as I can tell, there was no bioengineering anything.
No,
he lets the body float off into the water.
Gets a cocoon around him, and then eventually he becomes Doomsday.
So we cut back to it, when Superman, or was it Batman gets in there, or Superman? Whoever gets in the ship where Lex is, all of a sudden there's this giant embryonic sack, and it's Doomsday. And Doomsday breaks out of it, and he's just dying to kill Superman.
Yeah.
For, like literally, I'm not leaving anything out for you guys. It's like a video game. This movie is, like, made from somebody who plays way too many video games. And I'm sure there are video games with better story arcs and better formulated plots. So Doomsday comes out, and he's this giant thing. Okay, so we'll reverse to the Batman versus Superman fight.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I like Dark Knight Returns, and so the idea that Superman is this golden boy, and Batman's just like, no, I'm not letting, you know, this, I've got to do what I've got to do.
Totally.
I love that. And so I didn't mind so much that Batman thought that Clark should be taken out, even though the motivation was a little bit different, or whatever other logic. I could ride that for a little bit. So the fight between Superman and Batman, which this is called Batman versus Superman, finally is happening. And I will say that when Batman was standing there in the suit,
it was cool.
It was cool. I thought, okay, this, once again.
And it felt like the fight, even though there was no context to the fight from Dark Knight Returns, it felt like the fight from Dark Knight Returns.
A lot of similar things.
The problem here is that there is no context. And the reason that fight works in Dark Knight Returns is Superman at that point is like the president's whipping boy. And Batman, in that fight, really doesn't have the intent to kill Superman.
Right.
He just wants to let Superman know that he can beat him if he needs to.
Right.
And that, you know, it's also Batman's way of moving out of the public eye. It's his retirement move, it's his kind of his escape plan to go off and do his own thing. Out, you know, it gives Superman the out to say that Batman's gone, and it gives Batman the out to be like, I've gone away, but I can always take you out if I really need to.
Yeah.
It's the perfect plan in Dark Knight Returns. In this one, it's just Batman trying to kill Superman. And meanwhile, Superman, we forgot about this plot point, he knows that Clark Kent is Superman, which I inferred that he knew from the ship, but who knows, maybe he knew it beforehand.
Right.
But he's kidnapped Martha Kent, and he pushes Lois off a building to get Superman's attention. Superman comes there, and Lex reveals his big plot, that he's got Martha Kent, and he has to go fight Batman right across the street, basically, because it's in Gotham. And he's been pulling Batman's strings, and he wants the two of them to fight to the death, and the only way Superman will get his mom back is if he brings Batman's head.
Right.
And so you got 1 hour, go fight him. So that's when he shows up for the fight.
Yeah.
So Superman is feeling like he has to fight Batman, but he's told Lois beforehand that he's got to try and get Batman on his side, but he doesn't know if he can do it.
Right.
So he's going into the fight thinking that, I don't want to kill Batman, I want to get Batman on my side. He could just say to Batman the minute he gets there, like,
hey, they've kidnapped my mother.
My mom's been kidnapped. I just need your help.
Right.
Like, I'm not a bad dude.
Right.
But instead, it's right into fight mode.
Which, I don't want to skip over. I did enjoy also the training sequence.
The training sequence was awesome.
Bruce's training sequence.
That was awesome.
I said this to you, and you said the same to me. Like, when that was happening, I kept thinking, like, man, if I could just take these snippets, if I could just take these pieces of film and put them together and make a Batman movie,
then that would be great.
Which seemed like what they really wanted to do anyway. Like, put that other stuff on the back burner and just make the Batman movie.
Yeah.
Because all those, it was filmed well. It was exactly how I picture Batman. I mean, Ben Affleck was in Batman shape, you know? Like,
he was pretty ripped,
and
man.
And he was doing exercises that
Batman would do. Batman, they reminded me of the comic book.
Yes, and it reminded me of, like, Rocky, and it was just like this more nitty-gritty type of
It wasn't like... It was so, like, it was like Rocky IV, where he's having to train out in the...
He's doing hard work exercises and not just lifting on the expensive machinery. It's not just like machinery.
a super machine that's got all this digitized stuff. Right. It's not Drago.
Right.
It's like he's lifting up pieces of wood and like helping carts out of the snow.
He's the underdog.
It felt like that, yeah.
And you love the underdog. The underdog,
exactly. Yes. And that sequence was great. And it was just like, I want more of this. This is Batman.
Yeah.
I'll go on record as saying right now that even this, though I did not like this movie.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck is my second favorite live-action Batman.
I thought that, too. I thought, man, I mean, Michael Keaton is
Michael Keaton's
is
the top.
But Ben Affleck is better than...
He's better than the movie. Way better than the movie.
All the last...
he's better than Bale. He's better than Clooney. He's better than Kilmer. That's no doubt. But to me, he's better than Bale, too. Like,
I agree.
People love those Nolan films.
Yeah.
But taking Christian Bale just as Batman,
right.
and what he's doing as Batman... Affleck's getting it more than Bale was.
I thought so, too.
So, yeah, that training sequence was awesome. He's doing these chin-ups, and he's got this, like, chain with this concrete just pulling in. And he's pulling pieces of concrete, and he's beating a tire with a sledgehammer.
Right.
And it was just really, really cool.
And that's what led up to the fight. And so by the time he goes through that, and then you see him in the armor...
He's got the armored suit.
I was still with that fight. There was so much garbage that had gone on. But,
yeah.
But at that point, I was like... Okay, finally something.
This is going to be fun, at least.
And it was.
It was short.
It was short, you know, for being the main event, is what
I
think.
The whole billing of the movie is Batman versus Superman. It took us a long time to get to
it. It was a long movie.
It was 2.5 hours, and I feel like this fight was maybe 10 minutes tops.
Yeah, tops, yeah.
Tops.
So they really could have just built up to that and had the resolution of that fight. Be the setup for the Justice League without everything else. But they tacked more on.
But instead, there's like a whole nother movie after the fight is over that really just you're done at that point.
Right.
So they have this big fight, and Batman's been using these kryptonite weapons, which has been all really cool.
Right.
He gets to the point where the only thing that's messed up really on Batman's suit is half of his mask's been torn off.
Right.
But other than that, he's in pretty good shape. And Superman's gotten beaten.
Right.
He's got this kryptonite staff, and he's going to kill Superman.
Right.
Lois has made her way here. Superman had told her that he's going to fight Batman, she got a helicopter and headed over there and found exactly where they were fighting.
Right.
And she gets... he's about to kill Superman, and Superman says something like, Martha, you gotta save her! Which he could have said at the beginning of the fight, that would have saved the whole fight. And Batman just goes nuts. He's like, how do you know that name? How do you know the name Martha? And it really is. It really feels like. And then she jumps in and she says, "It's his mom's name. It's his mom's name."
Right. So Lois Lane comes out of nowhere.
Just out of nowhere.
And I don't believe that she could have heard the name spoken. It was barely spoken under Superman's breath. And so she comes out of nowhere as if she already knew what was going on there.
Yeah.
And interjects and says, "It's his mother's name."
And so that's just it. All this buildup of Batman convincing everyone that he should take out Superman in that one moment, just because their moms have the same name.
Right.
He recalls that his mom's name is Martha.
Right.
That's it. They're all of a sudden best friends. He's not going to try and kill him.
Right.
He helps him up, and they're all of a sudden a team. It is the most lackluster ending that you could possibly imagine to the fight.
I will say that I think the intention was that Batman realizes Superman's humanity at that point.
But it doesn't come across like that.
It really doesn't, because, first of all, there's no humanity at all in this film. You don't care about anybody, and it was so quick and such a, like, the name thing. It was lame.
It almost just felt like Zack Snyder was like, look how clever I am.
Really
they have
flat.
The same name and nobody's really addressed this before. I'll do it.
Right.
But it's not clever.
Right.
Like, it's like... It's
and,
not.
And Batman, you know, Batman's motivation for killing Superman is really for the good of humanity and the overall world because he just has too much power. And just because...
He has a mom... Wouldn't change that.
Yeah, it doesn't change anything, really. So anyway, they become best friends. And Superman asks him to go help get Lex, or get his mom back.
Well, yeah, there's two plots going on at once. Lois tells Clark that there's something going on in the Kryptonian ship with Lex. But meanwhile, his mom's going to get killed. And so Batman says, I'll take care of your mom, you go take care of the ship.
Which, by the way, Lex Luthor's taken Polaroid pictures of Martha Kent with a gagger in her mouth and wrote witch on her forehead, and it looks very much like the Joker once again.
But then they bothered to clean her up afterwards.
Right, and the Joker was taking Polaroids too, and it just seemed like Okay, so keep going.
So Superman's gonna go off and do his thing. Meanwhile, Lois. So Superman goes off to do his thing. Batman inexplicably takes off the awesome suit he's had on. That gives him way more power. Yeah. He takes it off and changes back into his regular suit to fly off and save the mom.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, okay, your mask is messed up, but why not just put your regular mask on? Like, you could have this awesome armored suit to go help his mom, and to maybe tackle the thing that Superman's going to go check out, because you just fought Superman in it. But he takes it off, and puts on his regular suit, and goes over to stop these bad guys.
At this point, I will give the benefit of the doubt that he's quicker.
He is quicker.
In his normal suit, and maybe he's just taking out thugs.
I agree.
But he could have brought the suit back.
He could have brought the suit back up when Doomsday was there. And especially when he found out that Doomsday was part Kryptonian.
Right.
So he goes to rescue the mom. There's a big play on the whole Batman scene from Dark Knight Returns where there's a kidnapper. Batman busts through a wall. And the whole sequence of Batman fighting those guys, that was well done.
It was fine. Yeah, it was cool.
He busts through a wall, takes the machine gun out of somebody's hands, and the kidnapper guy says, "I'll kill her, man. Believe me, I'll do it." And in the comic, Batman says, "I believe you," and then shoots the guy because he's going to kill this child.
Right.
And it's a big moment in Dark Knight Returns, because even though Zack Snyder would have you believe that Batman kills throughout Dark Knight Returns, he does not. Yeah. He does not kill throughout Dark Knight Returns. That's why it's a big moment when he kills that guy, because he had no other choice at that moment. Right. That kid was going to die, and this is all he could do. But Zack Snyder's Batman has killed throughout the film. So when he does the "I believe you" and then shoots the gas tank and it blows up and it kills the guy, there's no payoff to that. You don't care.
Right.
It's not like the first movie where Superman decides to kill Zod and that was a big thing that everybody talked about, that he crossed the line. He plays this moment as if it should be something, but it's not, because you're accustomed to Batman killing people. So big deal, he killed somebody else.
Right.
And he gets down with Superman's mom and he says, "It's okay, I'm your son's friend." And she says, "Oh, I can tell by the cape." She's able to joke and stuff about it.
Right, she's having
a good time. It's no big deal. So he saves her. Superman goes off, confronts Lex, and that's when we get the big Doomsday reveal.
Oh, okay. So Doomsday is a giant Ninja Turtle-looking
abomination creature.
He's
very odd. He's as tall as a house.
He immediately starts leaping around.
I don't really feel like he was destroying anything, though. Like, other than finding Superman and that destruction happening, he wasn't really going out and, like, wrecking stuff. And there was, like, a major threat. And they went out of their way.
Yeah, he wasn't on a rampage.
They went out of their way to say, "Well, good thing most people are off work and the building's empty," or something like that. Like, it was almost like a thing to say,
okay,
it's not like the first movie. There's not people dying, guys. Trust me.
As if the next day that would be okay to have your entire business.
So it's the same deal, giant destruction of Metropolis.
Right.
Wonder Woman's getting on a plane for some reason.
Yeah, she's skipping town for some reason, even though she knows that there's some stuff going down, or she has to assume.
But, thankfully, she sees it on the TV screen in the plane, and has her suit, her sword, and her shield with her.
Yep.
She hasn't been a hero for 100 years, but she's got that in her carry-on luggage, just in case.
Just in case.
Gets geared up and heads to the fight.
How'd she get through the airport security with that? Nobody
knows.
Okay, so let's see. So, they're fighting Doomsday, and it's the Doomsday fight is a long, drawn out fight, which I feel like I didn't even need. I don't even want Doomsday.
I didn't want Doomsday in the movie
at all. Lois. Okay, after the Batman and Superman fight, Lois takes the Kryptonite spear and throws it into.
Yeah, she's just in the basement in that building.
Right,
just chucks it.
Which, by the way, is also flooded. So she throws it into the water as if that's just going to be, you know, 10 feet down is going to be the final resting place of this massively powerful weapon that nobody would ever find, I guess. She throws it in there. All this fight happens, whatever. Then Batman realizes that he's Kryptonian, that Doomsday is Kryptonian, and that the spear would aid him in, or he could possibly kill it. So he's in his Batwing, and the creature is... Oh, This is after Superman has pushed Doomsday up into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
He gets up there. It's real. He's been pushing him for like 3 seconds, and they're not even to the atmosphere yet. They're just in the sky, and all of a sudden, this government, this room full of G-men says, they're watching it on a radar, and he says they're far enough up where we can
nuke them.
We can nuke them, and nobody, no casualties. Okay, fine. So they shoot a nuclear missile at him. It blows Superman and Doomsday up. Doomsday falls back to Earth.
They see one thing track back to Earth, and one's just gone.
Right.
And they just automatically know that one thing is Doomsday.
Right, they assume it's Doomsday, and not Superman.
It's just a little blip on a radar.
Yeah, they don't have visual confirmation. It's just a blip on a radar. So he comes back down. Batman, okay, there's this giant destructive monster.
Well, hang on. I want to throw in the government thing, too, because it made me chuckle. The government then goes, well, we can't hit him with a nuclear power. He lands, and then you see a scene of him kind of like having a energy power-up thing or something. But they're just watching this on radar, basically.
Right,
And so they said, we should hit him with another nuke. And they said, we can't hit him again. Every time we hit him, he gets stronger.
Right, every time.
Every time. They've hit him one time. And they don't really know that he's gotten stronger.
They don't know if he's stronger or not.
Back to what you're saying.
So he's back. So Doomsday falls on this island that's sort of in between Metropolis and Gotham, I guess. And Batman, instead of flying back in his Batwing to get the spear... He says...
This is crazy.
I gotta get the spear, because he's talking to Alfred now, I guess. I gotta lead him back to Gotham so I can get the spear. Why would you want to bring this thing back to your city that you're trying to protect and let it loose there? And not only that, but also not give yourself a chance to get the spear. Why don't you leave him on the island?
Yeah.
Go get the spear... And then come back and fight him with the weapon you think is going to kill him. Because if you bring him back with you, you're going to have to fight him the whole way. You might not get the spear. So
he's just kind of chilling there.
Right.
Like, you could easily just leave, go get the spear, and come back.
Right.
And maybe grab your armored suit while you're at it.
Right. And I didn't
see... Do both things.
I don't remember seeing how... Showing him leaving the island. I don't know how he gets...
He just kind of jumps. I think he just follows and jumps.
And
so now they're in Gotham, and he chases him through Gotham.
Okay.
So you're letting him destroy his own city, too.
Right. So, like, 10 blocks of city is just ruined, just decimated with this fight between him. Then we cut
back. That's okay, because I already went home from work already.
Right. Then we cut back to Lois, who's just standing. Okay, it's been like 15 minutes of screen time. We cut back to Lois, who's just standing in this abandoned building where Superman and Batman fought. Inexplicably, just standing there.
Yeah.
And she somehow says... She doesn't say it, but somehow she knows that she needs to get that... Well, I better get that
she
spear.
She doesn't say anything. She just automatically gets it, as if somebody has contacted her and said, hey, we need that spear.
Right. She just
because it'll hurt this thing.
She just goes back and...
She just knows.
Dives into the water to get the spear, but there's a collapse, apparently.
Yeah.
Was it because of their fight?
Well, it's because of the fight. And some people are going to say, well, she probably figured out that since he was using the Kryptonian ship, it's Kryptonian. Then why did she chuck the spear in the first place? Because she's the one that told Superman that it's at a Kryptonian ship that he's doing things. Wouldn't she have known then to save the Kryptonite if there was some kind of Kryptonite thing going on, if she knew that? It's just like implied that she somehow figured it out.
I'm more upset that she was still standing there.
Yeah. So she gets in the water and the destruction causes the stuff to come down on top of her.
She was playing Candy Crush.
Yeah, she's playing Candy Crush.
Yeah. So then Superman, for the third or fourth time in this film, rescues her at the last minute because he's in the sky and he can hear her screaming for help in Gotham City while he's in Metropolis.
Well, they do another allusion to Dark Returns, too. He's got the skeletal form where he's been nuked, and then the sun re-energizes him or something like that. And it's obviously kind of a play on something that may happen at the end of the film that we'll get to. But it's just kind of thrown in there. It's just like, here it is. Right. Here's another scene from Dark Knight Returns.
So then he goes in. He saves her from drowning.
Wonder Woman has shown up at this point, right?
Wonder Woman has shown up, which...
she saves Batman after he says O-S-H.
Right, she saves Batman, and
then you get
that
funny moment.
And then the funny
you already saw in the trailer is she with you? I thought she was with you.
Everybody's supposed to laugh. So.
And everybody laughed in the theater, even though they've seen the scene. And that was pretty much one of two, funny moments.
There were two times where people laughed. I didn't at all.
I didn't either.
I actually... We'll get to Wonder Woman in a second. So once again, with no emotion whatsoever, I never felt like Lois was in any danger at any point because I knew that when she got pushed off the building, of course Superman's going to fly in and save her. That's kind of an old bit. And it's fine if they did it, except I don't care about their relationship at all.
No.
But he'd already saved her inexplicably a couple times. And then so he does it again, and it's just like this, and they play the sappy music, and it's like, okay, great. Yeah, he saves Lois.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So he grabs the spear, which weakens him.
Yeah, he tells her that she's his world, and then he takes off.
Right.
Because they're not going to be... They're fighting... Wonder Woman and Batman and Superman are all fighting, and it keeps on powering up, and you get... He starts growing these bone protrusions, but there's no explanation as to why he'd be growing these bone protrusions.
I assumed it was from the nuclear missile, because he starts growing them after he lands.
Yeah.
But why... Why that? Why would that happen? Nobody...
I guess it's a way of trying to make him look more like the comic, but you never get into the point where he looks like the comic. So it's just like... So it's a pointless thing that you're making him grow these bone things, because he never ends up looking like the comic. He just looks like a big abomination guy with a couple bones sticking out.
Right. So Superman shows up... I can't remember exactly where this happens, but Doomsday, who honestly doesn't seem... He's not noticeably bigger than he was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not noticing him doing anything that is more powerful or anything. It's just that the government...
He's growing bones.
The government guys said it, and yeah. Then he gets knocked through a building, and immediately after, Wonder Woman says, he seems to get more powerful, he seems to absorb energy. Based on what?
You don't know.
The only thing you've seen is him get knocked through this building now.
That's it.
And he's not getting strong. He's not... And so, like, these dialogue points to tell you that he's getting stronger, but there's no visual representation of that whatsoever.
At all.
So,
other than the bones growing.
Right. So Wonder Woman, I didn't mind her as much as I thought, and as I thought I would.
I agree. There's not enough of her in the movie for me to have a basis right. of if she'll be a good Wonder Woman later on. It's just kind of, she's just kind of thrown in there. And
right.
it's like, here she is.
Right.
Oh, here she is again.
Right.
But at no point is it making sense, up until the end where she helps with the fight.
Right.
But all these times she's been interjected in the film, you've just kind of gone, why is she here? And what does this have to do with anything?
Right. So,
oh, she also gets, totally forgot about this, she gets the files from Batman.
Right, this is the best part.
So, this is before the big fight, but right. The big fight's almost over. That's almost the end of the film. But Batman gives her all the files from LexCorp, and she opens it up a file that says Metahumans.
In an email.
She opens a file that says Metahumans, and inside are four file folders, and on those file folders are the superhero logos
right.
for Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Flash, and Cyborg, which would make no sense because none of them are superheroes yet.
Right.
So she opens her file, and it's a picture of her.
Why take the time to
design
logos?
Why do that?
You have to design a logo.
You have to
put work into it.
So she opens her file, and it's a picture of her from 1918 that's obviously from the Wonder Woman film. It's got Chris Pine in it, and they're all just standing there posing for a picture.
Right. This is something that really bugged me in the movie. The first time you see that photograph is when Bruce opens it.
Yeah.
And when he opens it, this music comes on.
Wonder Woman theme
music. It's this heavy guitar... driven music, and I don't have a problem with guitar driven music and soundtrack. That's not my problem. It's a big musical cue, right?
Yeah.
So that's her theme, apparently, but there's no variation of it later. It's just the same thing. So when she opens the picture, the same music comes up again.
Yeah.
Oh, why? She knows about the picture. So the music plays and it's built up, but you still have three more folders to open, or four more, or three more.
Yeah, so she opens up that one, so she looks at that. So she also has pictures of herself. Like,
right.
There's other pictures of her. There's a picture of her looking out the back of a car, and she's smiling right at the camera.
There's surveillance video of her getting at the ATM.
And she looks right up at the camera and, like, smiles at it. I'm like, if you really don't like your picture being taken, if you want to stay out of the limelight, then maybe you shouldn't smile at every camera you see.
Right.
So then she opens up the Aquaman file. I don't remember which sequence she
think
does.
I Flash was first.
Okay, so it's Flash. And he's in some convenience store, and he's got his long ponytail.
I hate the
little
casting
fuzzy
for this, by the way.
Goatee, and so it's getting robbed. And he runs over and stops it, and runs back, and he does this kind of raise his eyebrow kind of look thing. That's
oh, he's
real
so
hipster
cool.
And cool.
Oh, I'm hip.
I hate his look. I hate it.
Yeah, I don't care for.
So then she opens Aquaman's, and his is like an underwater surveillance thing, and it's going into a shipwreck, and you see his eyes glowing, and he's really like doing a pose for this camera. Like, he swims up. And he's looking
he
at it
sits
for a
in front
while.
Of it for what seems like
and
a long
kinda
time.
He's kind of moving with his trident, and he's still just kind of looking at it. And for a long time, he's just kind of posing for it.
Yeah.
And then he hits it with his trident and swims off real fast.
Right.
Or something. He hits it with something. I don't know if it's a trident or not. And then we get the Cyborg one, and that's the most laughable of the three.
It's the worst one.
It is like Sci-Fi Channel movie quality. It's really bad.
Yeah.
It's starring Miles Dyson from Terminator 2. which I guess is supposed to be like a clever thing that the guy that creates Cyberdyne is the guy that's creating Cyborg, his son. And on the back, behind him is some kind of energy
like a
bed.
Vertical table. It's like a vertical table with...
And all that's left of his son is a head and neck, very, very little of the shoulder and torso area, maybe a little bit of arm, but not enough that anybody would still be alive.
Right.
And he's talking about how the treatments aren't working and this experiment's not working or something.
He's videotaping himself making an audio tape on an audio recorder.
Yeah, so
he's saying these things into an audio recorder while he's videotaping himself. And in the file, it's like edited, like there's a cut to like different periods in time. And it looks like, it reminds me of Nightman, the TV show from the 90s. It's like that quality is what it looked like to me.
It's really bad.
And as much as I didn't like the rest of the film, or a lot of parts of the film or whatever, at least the film quality is there. Even though I don't care for the CG, like there's a certain film quality is there. And this, it was jarring. I mean, to me, at least, it was very jarring. I thought, wow, this looks like... like the Flash TV series, which I like. I know you like that, and I like the TV series for what it is, but that doesn't belong
there. It really felt like it was produced by a completely different company for the lowest budget they could get.
And it was probably supposed to look like a home recorder, but you would have done much better to get a home recorder.
It looks really poor.
It looked like it was...
And all of these sequences really are just kind of thrown in. You're already bogged down by all this other stuff in the film.
There's so much going on.
And you're just like, I don't even care. Like, I don't care that you're introducing these characters. You didn't need to do it even. But again, it's just a sign that they wanted Avengers... They wanted their own Avengers as fast as they could, and sprinkling these guys in this movie were how they were going to do it.
And if it had been like one was revealed here and there, it would have been fine.
All four together?
It would have been better at least, but like I said, you got to click through each... Like imagine you're sitting there and you're clicking through stuff on your computer, and you're watching video file after video file. It really kind of takes the wind out of your sails. By the third time, it's not exciting anymore.
It's not.
By the second time, you're kind of like... Okay, you know, and when you see them, you know what it's going to be anyway.
Yeah,
so
you've
seen
the logos.
It's not a big deal.
You know exactly who. The logos would have been enough.
It felt...
All she had to do was open her file folder. We would have known. You made the logos for a reason.
Right.
We would have known that's going to be Flash.
Right.
They've got Aquaman. They've got Cyborg. Cyborg is a little iffy if you'd recognize that logo as being like a Cyborg logo. But still, it's enough that if you're throwing in this little Easter egg, you're not giving enough that a regular audience is going to know who those people are anyway.
Right.
So you're just throwing it in there for comic fans, so that's enough.
It felt, that sequence in a nutshell describes this whole movie to me. It feels forced. It feels dumbed down for outsiders, which, you know, I understand you want it to appeal, but the story itself doesn't make sense. So this goes back to, they have not made a good movie. And they've been making movies since, the 20s? They've been telling stories. Stories have been told for as long as humanity has been around, for thousands of years. And for somebody to have a $250 million budget to me and not understand basic principles of storytelling is a slap in the face to film audiences, to film critics, and to comic book fans. And I understand... the rush of like, wow, I get to see Superman and Batman on film and do their thing. I get that.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine... It's very irresponsible, and like I said, it's a slap in the face to comic book fans, and as comic book movie fans and comic book fans, people should start demanding, you know, better films and let the studios know monetarily, look, we like these characters. We want to see these characters,
but not like this.
Don't just crap something out and have a guarantee that it's going to be a success. Which this movie is going to make money.
The opening weekend is going to be huge, regardless.
Right.
The advance ticket sales alone are going to make it huge. Right. They held off on these reviews until that night. They embargoed them as long as they possibly could.
Right.
I feel like, but. I challenge anyone that does like the film to think about how much better the film would have been if all you had was the Superman-Batman dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, if you trimmed out all the Wonder Woman stuff and all the little guest appearances and the Doomsday sequence and all that stuff, and it was really a Superman-Batman fight, and even with Jesse Eisenberg's Luthor stuck in there, It would have been, the film would be better for it.
There were,
like,
right.
There wouldn't be as much confusion going on. Cut out that dream sequence, cut out all that stuff, and you'd have a much more solid film.
Yeah, the two subplots with the wheelchair guy and the
didn't need that at all.
The senator lady, like, really slowed everything down. It's just a poorly made film.
It
That's
really
all
is.
There is to it. It's a poorly told story. It's poorly thought out. And it's very disappointing because, like I said, like, I loved Batman in this, and I like the casting of Superman.
Yeah, right? He wasn't given enough to move with.
Right. And it's just like, you could have really trimmed this down and made a really, really solid film with a good. You could have just made Dark Knight Returns, honestly.
You could have, but you're already saying he's been around for 20 years, so what's the point of not doing it full on? But anyway, so back to the end of the movie, though.
Oh, yeah.
So we have this fight. Superman flies off. He's got the kryptonite staff. You know where this goes. He stabs Doomsday. Doomsday hits him, and he dies.
He stabs him. The bone goes through Superman.
Yeah, the bone goes through Superman. Superman stabs him with the kryptonite, and Superman dies. So they're also cramming the death of Superman into this film.
Right.
It's just like one more thing to just cram in there.
Right.
Lois is distraught. There's two funeral sequences, one for Superman, one for Clark. We get another thing thrown in where Ma Kent goes and says, oh, Clark had this sent to my house so you wouldn't see it. Gives her the engagement ring that Clark was going to give to her.
Right.
So we're already at the point where they're going to get engaged. You've missed their entire relationship,
right.
And they're already at the point where they're going to be engaged. And that's just one more thing to lump into this movie. Like, they're going to get engaged, and this didn't happen. We get to the funeral scene.
It's too late by that time to drum up any type of romantic feeling
it's
or nostalgia.
Not.
I mean, it's too late.
You just don't care, really, that he died. And then all of a sudden the world cares about Superman, too.
Right.
Even though all the film you've been hammering home how people don't like Superman and how he's lost his halo and how everyone fears him. But even though they've done the exact same thing as the last movie with the destruction, and it's only resulted in him dying, it seems like it would be kind of a relief to everyone. Like, okay, good. Well, that problem's out of the way. Yeah. Superman's gone. We don't have to worry about him causing this destruction again. But now everybody's mourning Superman, and they've created this monument. Look around you for the monument to Superman.
Right.
And there's this big funeral sequence and all this stuff, and it's like, you can't hammer home throughout the entire film, how distraught Superman is about being a hero, and how the world's kind of turned against him, and at the end, all of a sudden, the world cares that he dies.
Right.
That doesn't work.
It doesn't work, man. Yeah, you're not selling your...
You're not selling that. So there's a funeral sequence, and the same thing, Batman's given the line of, I failed him in life, but I won't fail him in death.
That really threw me.
You didn't fail him in life.
How did you fail him in life? You barely knew him.
You knew him for a fight, and that was it. And then you became on the same side, and you fought together.
Right.
And you saved his mom. How did you fail him?
Right.
Like, you didn't.
Right.
And so then he's talking about how they're going to have to get the heroes together. And why? Oh, it's just a feeling I have.
And it's an obvious, once again, a desperate, forced attempt for a setup for Justice League. It feels that way. It's not that I didn't know they were going to do it. I was open to them doing it well. But it felt like... Once again, like, we got to do this, so, okay, yeah.
Here it is.
We'll say it. We'll,
and people want Luthor to be bald.
Right.
So we're giving you one more capper scene with Luthor inexplicably getting his head shaved in prison.
Right.
And Batman going to visit him in this weird, odd way.
Right. Okay.
Where he's going to brand him.
Right. So the whole thing, the whole prison sequence is a cliche villain thing. He's in the white room now. He's got a shaved head, and he's got a white outfit on, and even the camera work at that point where you're backing slowly out of the cell.
He's doing more wacky stuff.
All cliche. I've seen it a million times, I feel like, especially in comic book films. Then Batman shows up, and it's very much like, felt like Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Or what was the second movie?
That's Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
Felt like that when...
Interrogation scene.
Yeah,
with
the
interrogation
scene. So that was recycled. And then the Superman... It shows Superman's casket at the end after they've had their mourning. And the camera moves down slowly. And guess what? The dirt starts to rise just before it cuts to black. I knew that was going to happen. Because it's a cliche.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that you could have done to make it exciting. And it wasn't exciting. Because I knew it was going to happen. You don't kill off the main character of your movie franchise and pretend like...
He's not going to come back.
Yeah, like it's going to be some shocker. It just...
It's really, he just doesn't understand, Zack Snyder doesn't seem to understand that these little events he's picked out don't have any emotional impact when you take them out.
Right.
If you take them out of the context of the story they're in, the Batman versus Superman fight yanked out of Dark Knight Returns, that killing scene of Batman from Dark Knight Returns yanked out. If they are playing off Injustice, that being yanked out and thrown in here, the death of Superman being yanked out and thrown in here, it's just like, there's a reason why those worked in the books and that people right. loved them, and right. that was the story that surrounded it. Not just that little tiny event.
Right.
It was the whole thing that led up to it, man.
And once again,
you can't
like,
just throw it in.
It's like video game brain. Like, everybody's... I see this more and more where just take all the best things that you like, and I think this is a result of our immediate culture, you know, like our... We get things immediately, and you can fast-forward, and you can skip things. Those things need a setup. They need an environment and a world to be in, and you have to have some moderation to appreciate things. And when you just take all the best little bits that you like from other things, like you just said,
yeah.
and throw them into something, it doesn't mean anything. It's look, and I want to say this too. We've admitted the things that we liked about the film. You've heard everything we didn't like. Film is art.
Yeah,
and you cannot talk somebody out of or into their reaction to art.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gut feeling. So if you liked this movie, for whatever reason, you wanted to see the fight, and you saw it, and you liked it, that's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad somebody is getting some enjoyment out of it. But once going back to holding companies responsible, I don't want to hear people pretending like this is a great, well-told film, because... It's not. It's just not. And those are... I don't want to... You know, there are rules in art.
Yeah.
And then there are not... You know, some of those rules can be bent. Some of them can be broken. But certain rules in storytelling are there for a reason. And it's the same way with all forms of art.
Yeah.
Same way with music. It's the same way with two-dimensional art, whatever. You can't just throw everything away that's conventional... And pretend like it's good. And the critics' reviews are not good for this film.
They're really bad.
I've seen the word train wreck I don't know how many times. It's been called a mess. It's been called, you know...
The most incoherent blockbuster
right.
in years.
Incoherent. I think a mess is really the best the best word for me. But and I've seen defense from people who have not seen it yet saying... Well, they're critics and they're not comic book fans. I doubt they've ever
Disney and Marvel probably paid them off. That's right. the one I keep seeing a lot, right. too. And it's like, that's just ridiculous. Come on, man. They've paid off 170 critics?
Right.
That's,
I don't always listen to critics either.
I don't either.
You know, and some they have their opinions, but when the general consensus is a certain way, and the consensus is it's a mess. It's not that I didn't like this about it, I didn't like that about it. None of this makes sense or reads well or translates well. It's because they've seen a million movies and they know how stories are supposed to be told. And
this didn't work.
To be quite frank, it just didn't work. And I don't know. I don't know how people's reaction is going to be to this,
I don't either.
To this film.
I would hope. My hope in it is that you don't just go into it with your preconceived notion that no matter how it is, I'm going to like it.
Right.
As long as I see that fight, I don't care. I'm going to like it. You should really. Judge a film based on the film, and don't just go into it saying, I'm going to like it no matter what. It's awesome because Batman fights Superman. Yeah. Don't do that, because that's all they're only going to give you, just garbage from here on out.
Right.
You should really just judge it, and if you see it and you like it, that's great. That's awesome, and I'm glad that you liked it.
Yeah.
It's not for me. I have a negative viewpoint of it. I'm not going to disparage you a positive viewpoint if you go into it and really judge it for what it is, and not just go into it and say, it's Batman versus Superman, so I like it no matter what. If you go into it and you like it and you could tell me why you liked it, that's great. I'd love to hear why you liked it. But don't just go into it with... just like I'm not going to go into it with... I went into it with an open mind, even though I thought I wasn't going to like it. Like we said, right off the bat, I turned to you and said, Ben Affleck is not going to be the problem of this movie.
Right.
And we were both like, this is good. This is good. We're enjoying this.
Right.
If it had been the case that I was going to hate it no matter what, I would not have liked it from the beginning. Like,
yeah,
I would have just said, I hate this. I'm not going to... You know, I wouldn't even give it a chance to watch it. If a person has a positive viewpoint of it, I'm not going to take that away from you.
Sure.
That's great that you liked it, but please don't take it away from me and automatically say to me, well, you shouldn't have this negative viewpoint. You're just negative about it all. You just don't like it and you hate it.
Right.
That's what they're doing to the critics. They're just saying, well, they just hate it because they're just going to hate it. That's a ridiculous stance to have. People are allowed to dislike things.
Not to mention, you know, these big blockbuster comic book movies have been doing really well.
Yeah.
Even Avengers 2, which I didn't think was that great.
I didn't enjoy.
You know, did... I don't know how it did critically, but I know it's doing better than this movie's doing. And honestly, I did not enjoy that movie, and that made this movie... This movie made Avengers 2 look like Lawrence of Arabia.
I totally agree. At least I can follow,
right.
And it had a coherent storyline. Even though I wasn't a fan of it, and I wasn't a fan of a lot of the scenes, and some of the acting was not so good, and I felt it was a rushed sequel, and it's definitely not one of my favorite Marvel films. I put it very low in my list of Marvel films. I completely agree that I enjoyed it more, and it was way more coherent, and it actually felt like a structured film.
I wasn't dying to... get away from it.
I really could not wait for it to be over.
It was headache inducing to me. Before we go, I want to make note of Lex Luthor's Jolly Rancher scene.
That was so weird.
He picks up the jar of Jolly Ranchers, and he takes forever to finagle one out of there, it seems like. And this government official is talking to him, and he unwraps a Jolly Rancher, and he very... seductively?
It's odd.
Puts it up to his mouth and pops it in there and goes, boop! And then he licks his fingers? What was that for?
It was...
Just because you
just
thought,
to show he's weird.
Right, just to show how weird he is.
Just to show how weird and odd he is.
But it doesn't... It's not playing on... It's not built on anything. It's just...
Just there.
Hey, could you be odd? Because the new thing is these...
People love the odd characters.
People love villains that are...
They're weird.
Who are physically weak, but... But different and
weird,
odd.
Odd.
And
they'll
remember
love that.
Remember
eat
the
that
Joker?
Up.
Remember how the Joker was weird? And it's just like somebody just let Jesse Eisenberg run free, have free reign on set or something. I don't know. We haven't even touched on everything. I'm sure that bothered
we're
me
an
about
hour
it,
and
but,
a half of
but yeah, it's crazy.
Like,
that's our honest review, and I don't.
This has got to be a hard episode to listen to if you really like the film, and I apologize for that. But if you really like something, you should be able to hear the other views on it. Like it's,
I don't know what people are going to say. I just like for me, I know, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I know. Like okay, this is a guilty pleasure movie that I have, and if somebody else tells me, well, this and this sucks about it,
I love The Shadow.
Okay,
I can't believe you like that. Yeah. Masters of the Universe, 1987 film. I get it all the time.
Yeah,
people telling me how horrible it is. Right. I can't believe you like that. And they're explaining to me why I shouldn't like it and all these different things. And I'm just like, that's fine. You go ahead. I'm still going to like it.
Right.
And I can hear them say these things to me, and that's fine.
That's my
only. They can have their viewpoint.
Yeah, that's my only point. Is not to say that I know when to stop and somebody else doesn't. I just want to hear, like, if you want to have a civil conversation about it or a civil discussion or you want to, like, lay out your case, like, I hate to see, and maybe we've been guilty of this in the past, and if we have, I want to apologize for it. And maybe I'm having, or maybe we're having a change of heart in some way or whatever, but I'm really tired of seeing this back and forth, this hateful rhetoric just because name calling somebody, like, you're stupid because you didn't get it, or you're stupid because you did like it.
Yeah.
I want to see that stop. Like, just realize that, you know, the movie, if you like this movie, just recognize that it's getting down to 32% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, just understand that you might be in the minority with this one. And just like I understand, like, I have guilty pleasure movies. There are
totally.
Plenty of movies I like that nobody else likes.
In certain films that I really like, I understand that I could see how a person wouldn't enjoy this, and how, like, for example, Master of the Universe, I can see how a fan of He-Man and other incarnations wouldn't enjoy this, and they could be able to say, well, this is why I don't like it. And that's totally valid, and that's, you don't like it because of those reasons.
Yeah.
Here's the reasons that I do like it. You know, that's fine. Everybody's got the reasons for liking and disliking something.
That's what I'd like to see. And I could see how somebody would like this movie. I mean, it's not without its saving graces, which I believe are simply Batman.
Ben Affleck's Batman.
Ben Affleck is Batman.
I'm with you there.
But
everybody keeps saying, well, why don't you say your positives about the film? And I'm like, well, Ben Affleck's Batman, that's my positive.
Right.
I'm sorry that there's not more that I found good. I would have loved to have liked more of the movie.
Right.
But I didn't.
I did, you know, once again, Henry Cavill... Cable.
Yeah.
I like him as Superman. I think he looks the part. It's just he wasn't given, like you said, he wasn't given anything to have any type of emotional dynamic or any type of story arc at all. I mean, there's no character arc at all.
It's just he's flat throughout. Which you need to not be flat throughout if you're doing the death of Superman.
And Gail Gadot, I could be wrong, but I think I saw I thought I had seen a TV spot or the second trailer or something where she turns around and speaks, and she's got she's got no accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I know, but she's got it in the film.
And I remember thinking,
yeah.
And I might have even texted to somebody. I said, I was wondering what they were going to do with her accent, and it looks like they've covered it up fine.
Yeah.
But she had it in the movie, so I wonder if they kind of ran out of time and she couldn't get it or whatever. But,
So I don't know, I kind of like that she has the accent. It's a different thing for Wonder Woman, but I like that it's implying that she's not, like, that she's different.
She's
from, got a little, you know,
from somewhere else, so she, you know, she could have,
she's not pinned,
you
know, down to certain.
Like I said, I like her. She's a beautiful woman.
She was much better than I thought she was
going to
be.
Yeah.
She looked more the role than I thought she was going to.
And she,
she's
obviously put on some weight, too.
Yeah.
That was my main concern.
The character being just thrown in there was a disservice to her portrayal of the character.
Yeah.
It really was. Just like Henry Cavill's character, Superman, was a disservice to him as an actor that he wasn't able to do anything with it.
Right.
All right, so I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, that's it. That's a long episode. But there it is. Batman versus Superman. We saw it. You didn't think we'd see it.
But we did.
But we did, and so now we have a leg to stand on when we give our opinion of it. Maybe one of you guys will like it. Maybe some of you guys will like it. I hope you do, for the sake of just going, not being let down terribly by a film that you've been looking forward to seeing. But
I know Justin from the Epic Film Guys podcast. I know he was really looking forward to it, and I am curious. I know he's seen it, and I know that he's been kind of guarded about his review of it. But I know that it sounds like, from what he's saying, that maybe there's some issues he had with it. Mm. I'm curious to see what somebody that was really, really looking forward to it, how they were able to go into it. Because we equated it to seeing King of the Crystal Skull and how much we'd looked forward to that film and how heartbreaking it was when we were disappointed by it. And I'm sure that it's not going to be on the same level that disappointment was for us.
Yeah, I wasn't looking forward to it that way.
For somebody that was looking forward to this, I don't think it's as much of a heartbreak as Indiana Jones was to anyone. Because anybody that wanted to see the movie and really was excited about it, they probably got the things that they wanted out of it, at least.
Right.
Whereas we got nothing out of Crystal Skull. I'm curious to see some reactions. If you want to post anything on the Action Features Facebook, that's great. If you don't, then you're just a turd.
We'll be back next time with a very fun, lighthearted episode. Promise.
All right.
All right.
See you.